And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
This is the Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Green light, 3-0, and she's gone!
Welcome to the 3-0 Show, part of the Athletic Baseball Show. It is Thursday, April 21st. Derek Van Riper, Britt Giroli, and Eno Saris all here. The band is back together on this episode. We'll talk about what matters to us this early in the season. Something about April baseball and trying to analyze April baseball is always a little strange because we're trying to put so much weight on 10 games or 12 games. And for pitchers, we're talking about two starts so far in most cases. We'll talk about some teams that are off to surprisingly fast starts that we might actually believe in as having better 2022 fortunes than we expected, and a few other things that have caught our eye. Plus, we give out our highly valuable week two awards for pitcher of the week and hitter of the week, and we have Britt's bold predictions for the season. Since she wasn't here last week, we still have them. She still gets to share the spiciest predictions possible. Eno and I will grade them on our 1-5 hot sauce scale. So a lot of ground to cover, and I want to kick things off with a question that Eno started to answer on Twitter earlier this week. Eno, what matters to you this early, and what should matter to all of us this early when we're looking at individual player performances?
Well, there's a big clue if you're watching on YouTube. My name today is Chase Wright. I've got such country hits as I Lost My Dog. Chase Wright is how often a hitter swings at pitches outside the zone. That is actually sort of important right now because, you know, we're looking for denominator. I hate to be such a math guy.
Great word.
Like we're looking for denominator because what you said is if we're looking at something that happens once a game or something, that's 12, we have 12 of that, right? If, then if you're looking at plate appearances or something, you might have 40 of that, right? But if you look at something that's per pitch, you can actually have maybe 200 pitches seen by now. For some of the hitters. And so you have a bigger sample then. You have 200 instead of talking about 12. And so looking at pitches outside the zone, you can see if a pitcher has drastically improved their strike recognition or if they've changed their approach somehow at the plate. That's one thing I look at. Another thing I look at is barrel rate because it's really predictive of power and it becomes meaningful in 50 balls in play. Now, right now we have players that have sort of 25 to 30 balls in play. So they're not quite there. So it's not like you can just say, oh, because this guy has a great barrel rate, he is now great. But we're closer to that than something like batting average. Batting average doesn't become meaningful until a year and a half of play. Batting average is not predictive, but barrel rate is. So I try to use barrel rate and chase rate. Those are my two favorite. I will look at something like swinging strike rate. That can give me a sense. That's also over a number of pitches seen or number of swings. So that can give you an idea of somebody that's just making a lot more contact. And then lastly, because barrel rate is not totally ready yet, not fully baked, I would take, that's a good way to describe it on 420. I will take, also hard hit rate, which is just how often they hit the ball over 95 miles an hour. It's like a sort of a blunt tool. It's not very good at telling you about power because you could be hitting the ball 95 miles an hour on the ground. However, early on, I'd like to know who's hitting the ball hard.
How about you, Britt? What matters to you this early?
I was going to mention hard hit rate if you had an Eno, because I think you ran the gamut of important things, especially this early. Like you said, it's tough to say. Like, for instance, I was watching the Orioles game the other day. Trey Mancini has three balls that, you know, two of them are probably out later, a month later in the season when it's not so cold. I think you saw last night, even with the Mike Yastrzemski ball with the Giants-Mets game. So you kind of wonder, like, where does that go? Where does that factor in? And if you look at some of those peripheral stats that you mentioned, I think you can not panic. It's also April 20th, and every GM, manager, person in baseball, the old adage is you get to the quarter pole before you look at the stats, right? You get to about Memorial Day before you have a decent enough sample size to say where things are trending. We're too early, in my opinion, to even talk about trends, right? Like, it is such a small sample size. It's hard to not overreact. But I think going by Eno's numbers, you can kind of get a sense of, okay, who's pressing early, who's not feeling it early, who may start to get on track here.
It's interesting you mentioned league-wide trends, because those do those are meaningful even when you're talking about players. And I think we're, if you're talking about the whole league, if you adjust for certain things, then you can start to talk about how offense is down and homers are down. Because if you adjust for the temperature, then it doesn't matter as much that it's super cold, right? And because you can actually sort of use math to adjust for temperature. Derek Carty did that recently and found that homers are back down to around 2018 levels, maybe even lower. So we've got a question of how much are the humidors changing things? Do we guess wrong on how the humidors would change things? Are the humidors going to change things differently early in the season than later in the season, which is possible because humidity changes over the course of a season. And then the ball, the freaking ball, the ball. We were supposed to get a deadened ball last year and they ran out of stock. And so we got 50% deadened balled and 50% 2020 balls. What are we getting this year? If we're getting 2020 balls or 2021 balls, maybe the ball is the source of the offense going down and not the humidors. So that's something that I would take into consideration with something like Jesse Winker. Jesse Winker has a good chase rate. He's seen the ball really well. He is in a new park, so you expect some of his power to go down. But he also has like 4 warning track flyouts. Is that temperature? Is that the new ball? Is it the new humidor? It's really hard to figure that part out. So that's why you try to look at some of the process stats. That's why I do like chase rate, because at least the guy's seeing the ball well.
Yeah. The other thing I want to point out too, though, is that pitchers are always ahead of hitters coming out of spring training. Yeah. This year, there was an abbreviated spring training. Did that change? And also, teams have extra roster spots. Almost all of them have chosen to load up on pitching. Yes. As we've seen starters, I think Max Scherzer was one of the first starters to go as deep as he went last night. Certainly the first Mets starter, and they've been leading baseball when it comes to rotation, pitching at least into the seventh inning. So how much of that, too, is the fact that you're basically getting these shortened starts and you're getting these bullpen games as well? Which makes it a lot harder for guys, I think, too. You're not getting that third time through the order. Sometimes you're not even getting the second time fully through the order for starters this early on.
Yeah, I think that is another thing that's really hard to pull out of that, you know, lowered homer number, right? Like, we're not looking at the same rosters that we'll look at the rest of the season. We're not looking at the same rosters we looked at the end of last season. And then, you know, I think it's also important to note that hitters, like, there's a shape of the season to hitters as a whole. And in fact, they swing, when you say that hitters are behind, part of that is they swing less early on. And early in the season, they swing less. And partially what they're trying to do is just see the pitches, see the bat, see, you know, like get acquainted with new stuff, new pitchers, you know, just sort of get their timing down, all that sort of deal. And so what you'll find is if you look at a leaderboard right now that just looks at swing rate over the last few seasons, the lowest two swing rates are 2022 and 2020. Well, 2020, they had the fewest amount of later on, you know what I mean? They had like the first 3 weeks of adjustment, and then there was like, you know, it was half the season was gone. And then 2022, we're early in the season. So I would expect swing rates to go up a little bit. And that's another thing to consider, I guess, when you're looking at players. But generally, if they're not reaching at pitches, they're not pressing. One thing you can see, for example, is that Aaron Judge and Joey Gallo are hitting the ball really hard in New York. That part is good. They're both chasing pitches outside the zone way more above their regular rate. And I just think that that's part of the package in New York, right? You just, every night is questions afterwards by the media. The media is larger media contingent than anywhere else. You know, there's the shows, the TV shows, the back page of the Post, you know, there's all this stuff, right? So I just feel like, you know, I think they're pressing. I think Gallo and Judge are pressing, and that's part of why the Yankees aren't scoring as many runs.
Yeah, so I know Britt wanted to talk about the Yankees today, and every time I think about the Yankees in April, I think it's not nearly as bad as people make it out to be. But the one thing I would be really worried about if I rooted for that team would be Gerrit Cole. Like, Gerrit Cole should be a constant. As an ace, he should be 5+ innings easily, dominance more often than not, and still good enough to get you in a position to win a game on the nights that he doesn't have his best stuff.
Well, they won.
Yeah, right. I know. Clark Schmidt came in and saved the day.
That's a little bit trolling.
You got to love that. How much of their problems extend beyond what Eno was describing and Gerrit Cole's bumpy start here? I mean, we know Cole later last season wasn't as good as he was earlier in the year, but this is a different sort of problem for him early on. So is the sky actually falling in the Bronx, Brit, or is this just the standard overreaction to a little bit of a sluggish start for the Yankees?
So there's a couple reasons I think I'd be concerned if I was the Yankees. One, you have to beat up on the bad teams. Losing a series to Baltimore when everyone's offense is down is inexcusable. A big reason why they played that wild card game at Fenway Park last year was because they couldn't beat the Orioles down the stretch when it counted. So, yes, it's early, but these games still count. And so I think you have to be a little concerned when you're going against a team like Baltimore early on. You have to be able to beat them. I don't care what your offense is doing. Secondly, when it comes to Cole, not only last night, but one of his previous starts this season, there was, like a 13-minute delay, and he mentioned being out of whack. I'm a little concerned with kind of what's between his ears right now, because reading Lindsay Adler's story this morning, Cole really believed that he was trying to do too much, trying to be too perfect. This sounds to me so much like a pitcher who's in his own head more so than anything else. It doesn't sound like he's hurt. The velocity's been okay. So I'm a little concerned, one, with paying a guy like that to be the guy, and that guy coming out there and saying, well, there was a slight delay. Oh, it was cold. Oh, it was this. And then you watch the juxtaposition of a Max Scherzer, who had a no-hitter going until, I think, of the sixth inning, continues to push himself to get into the seventh, knowing it's a doubleheader. That's what you pay those guys to do, right? This isn't Nestor Cortez we're talking about that dropped a clunker to a Detroit team that's, by the way, ravaged right now with injuries. This is supposed to be the guy that finds a way to get five innings, even when he doesn't have his best stuff. And so watching that game, I think I'm concerned just based on some of the history with him. I mean, he hasn't shown up in big moments before. It seems like it's a little bit of a pattern for him.
You know, I can tell you that his, you know, his stuff plus is still excellent. I can tell you that his pitches are still moving great. And I can give you sort of standard excuse lines. I do have a little bit of worry because, you know, one thing that you noticed in the start last night, and this might start out sounding like an excuse, it was cold. You know, he was having trouble commanding his pitches, I think. But, you know, his story is part of this whole sticky stuff enforcement saga, you know, and he is one of the more prominent people. He's one of the few people that has, like, fielded a question in front of the TV cameras about it and biffed. I'd have to say on yes. That answer when he was like basically like, yeah, this is something that's been handed down from our forefathers. You know, there was this whole debate about whether or not sticky stuff is for command or if it's for stuff. It seems like in Cole's case, what he's missing the most from it is command. Because the stuff for the most part is there, but he's not hitting his locations. And in a cold day like that, when he's looking for something to help him with location, he just doesn't have that sticky stuff anymore. So I think that he's going to either have to outstuff this or find some locations that he's okay missing in. That's something that Zach Greinke and Max Scherzer told me all about this, where he says that, like, you know, command is not hitting my spots exactly. We know from command research that pitchers miss their targets by 13 inches on average. So it's not about hitting my target exactly. It's about hitting my target or missing in a good direction. If I'm going to aim high, do I hit high exactly or do I miss high higher rather than miss low and in the zone? And so that's something that Max Scherzer, I think, has perfected. He's found places where he can miss towards. He found places where, you know, he can target and miss in the right direction. And I think Cole needs something like that, because when he misses now, he's missing in the wrong direction.
Yeah, if you go back to June 1st of last year, Gerrit Cole, among 75 starters with at least 100 innings pitched since then, Gerrit Cole is 40th in WAR. So he's, you know, in there with Joe Musgrove and Framber Valdez and Alek Manoah, and those are good pitchers.
It's the homers, right?
Yeah, it's the homers. 1.62 homers per nine during that span. Still striking a ton of guys out. Walk rate isn't out of control bad stuff, as you mentioned. The velo, at least, is still there. The bar is unbelievably high because of the contract and because we know the talent ceiling is best pitcher in the league. So when someone who can be the best pitcher in the league pitches like a top 30 starter, people are going to ask a lot of questions. That's part of what comes with the territory. As far as the Judge and Gallo point you made before, you know, I'm much more worried about Gallo than Judge for kind of obvious track record sorts of reasons. You do wonder, and I think this is something you may have looked at in the past, when we're talking about players who either are playing for a new long-term contract or guys who just signed a long-term contract, how much their willingness to chase.
Their pressing. Chase rate goes up.
Right. Chase rate will fluctuate just based on extra effort being put in to try and make something happen. So I wonder if part of what's going on with Judge is trying to grip the bat a little tighter and improve on every single swing, on every single pitch, that he's worth every single penny that he wants to eventually get.
When he arrived, when Gallo arrived in New York on the trade, he had the second best chase rate on the Yankees. And right now he has a below average chase rate. So, you know, he's really pressing. Maybe it's the early season stuff, and it's not like, you know, whatever is written in stone, but we're seeing there's actual signal there. There's something that's telling us something.
One more question for you guys. Do you guys think that Gerrit Cole is well suited in the New York market? That's what I've kind of been wondering after I've seen some of this stuff.
I'll jump in real quick. I don't think there's any performance related reason. If you look back since he got there in 2020, I don't think you can look at him and throw him in the same conversation as players that have gone there in the past and just look totally different than they were before they got there. I think the problem that Gerrit Cole might have, at least in terms of how he's answering questions and conducting himself in post-game interviews, he might be telling us too much. It might just be like, hey, man, like, you got to put a little PR spin on this. Yeah. You're just like a little bit too direct. Sometimes telling the complete and honest truth will just piss people off. And I think the value of not telling us everything to him might be greater than the value of being completely open with all of
like,
us, right?
Yes. Think about the worst interviews, but the best, the face of the franchise people in New York. Derek Jeter et al. Even A-Rod was good at this. They were great at not saying anything.
Right. They played it like politicians. I mean, that's just handling the media in a way where...
It's awful as a writer, I have to say.
That's the worst.
It's not fun to cover. It's not fun to read. But I think it keeps you from reaching the peak levels of scrutiny because you said the thing that was true. You said the thing that was too honest. Yeah, the start was delayed 12 minutes and that made me uncomfortable. That's the wrong answer in New York. Say something else. Say that you had a pebble in your shoe.
Yeah, because then it's a whole week bad of how soft you are on the
right.
Airway.
I mean, like, so you just have to find something else. You don't have to lie. You just don't have to tell us the specific truth in that case. I think that's what's going on with Gerrit Cole more than can't handle the pressure of the contract, can't handle the pressure of New York. I think a lot of that tends to be overblown, but it's interesting that Gallo, in particular, with that chase rate, has changed so much from the time prior to when he was in New York to where he's been at since he got there.
Yeah, I'm doing a whole piece about plate discipline, and I went straight to him on that entire Yankees team to talk about plate discipline, and he was talking about how it was innate, and he's always been able to tell balls from strikes, and in fact, his father used to yell at the Little League umpire if he ever took a strike because he knew his son wouldn't take a strike.
Be nice to the umpires at all levels. Yes.
Especially some umpire got punched this week.
Don't punch umpires. Don't punch referees.
Some little league umpire got punched.
Yeah, you're doing it wrong if you're getting that upset with the umpires.
Yes, you are.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I wanted to ask you both, which team's surprisingly fast start are you actually buying? You know, it's possible that you're only buying them as a 500 team and you thought they'd be below 500 or a wild card contender and you thought they were a non-contender before. There were three that caught my eye just based on record. You can go off the board. You don't have to choose any of these three as your actual answer to this question. We have the A's, who are 7-5 entering play on Wednesday, the Cubs, who are at 6-5 entering play on Wednesday, and the Rockies, who we have laughed at in the history of the three of us doing a podcast together, probably as much as we've laughed at any franchise. Maybe the Mets are right there as the silver medalist in that contest because, well, they're the Mets and we talk about them a lot, but 8-3 are the Rockies entering Wednesday. And I was interested in your thoughts on this because they also extended Kyle Freeland 5 years, $64.5 million. So they're doing something in Colorado. I don't know if we necessarily agree with the something they're doing, but they have a plan. It's their plan, uniquely their plan. Maybe it's working. Probably it's not working. But Britt, you can go first. Any of those teams or some other team that has really surprised you with a fast start that you actually are believing in?
I'm not going to buy any of those teams.
I reject the premise of the question. Go back to your corner, nerd.
I mean, look at how many games we've played. We're analyzing like 13 games, 11 games. I can't buy any of those teams. Maybe if we get again to Memorial Day, I'll feel a little differently. I tell you who I am buying, though. This is probably not a surprise, but the Mets are 9-3. They swept the Giants in a doubleheader yesterday. I know before that they hadn't really played anybody, but like we talked about with the Yankees, this is still the time of the year you have to beat up on the bad teams. They've done this without Jacob deGrom. They've done this kind of concerned about Max Scherzer's hamstring. The back half of that rotation has stepped up. Pete Alonso has been this like great DH. I'm buying the Mets because they actually expect to win, it seems like. And Buck Showalter has been a huge difference maker. I'm buying them. I think the Angels, who have the same record as the A's, look like they could be headed in the right direction. I know Ken Rosenthal wrote a strong column earlier this year that he feels like they'll make the playoffs. I still am not really sure they're going to be able to hold up over a season pitching-wise long-term. But I look at the Rockies, and I look at the A's, and I look at the Cubs, and I think the Cubs, first off, are only, what, like one game over 500 right now? They're 6-5. I don't know if I would say that's unexpected.
Yeah.
But you look at some of these records, right? Like, you know, the A's are 7-5, right? So they lose two games and everything changes, right? Tampa Bay 6-6, Toronto 6-5. Everything is just so condensed. Like one bad series you go from first to last. So I have a really hard time buying any of those teams. I will say I am surprised that the Tigers haven't started better, though, like I said, they've had a lot of injuries. I'm surprised that Oakland has held its own. They did win a series against the Rays. I'm surprised that the Rays haven't played a little bit better. But again, it is so early. I hate even sitting here and analyzing when a good week, a bad week is going to change literally everything in the statistical category right now.
I mean, the A's avoided sweeps at the hands of the Phillies and Jays on the road, which, based on our expectations for that team, was surprising. Winning a series against the Rays, big. They've got a series they need to do well in, and they're doing well so far against the Orioles right now. Talk about a team that has to make all of its layups if they're going to exceed expectations. Oakland is that kind of team for sure, because as teams get more and more looks at some of these younger pitchers that are breaking in, I'm very curious to see if they have any success compared to what they've had early on this season. The Angels, by the way, I'm on board with Ken. I've gone on the record on this pod. Like, I think the Angels can be a legit playoff team. I am increasingly concerned about Joe Maddon, though. The decision to walk in a run with Corey Seager at the plate didn't make sense to me at the time. It made even less sense to me after reading the piece that Ben Clemens wrote over at FanGraphs, where if you put peak Barry Bonds at the plate, it was still a bad idea mathematically to issue an intentional walk with the bases loaded in that instance. And I'm just wondering if we're at this point where Joe Maddon being himself is actually a net negative in terms of how he's managing a team. He did it for reasons including an attempt to avoid the big blow, very scientific but not rooted in math, and to just stir up the group, quite frankly.
I was in the press box when he did it in 08. He did it in 08 in Tampa Bay to Josh Hamilton. Also, people forget about that. They go right to the Barry Bonds reference, but he's done it before. Here's the thing. Does everything have to be rooted in math?
No, it doesn't. But you shouldn't do objectively dumb things to fire your team up. You can do reasonably smart things to fire your team up. That
and who is he shaming? He's shaming Austin Warren.
Very weird.
Yes. That was, it was very weird.
Austin Warren is now like on the mound being like, oh God, like everyone's talking about me. You know, they're talking about how I can't get this guy out. And like, who are you shaking up? Mike Trout is, did you see that video of Mike Trout like realizing what was going on?
Trout's face. I mean, Shohei Ohtani, Anthony Rendon, you're taking, what do you think those guys are actually doing? It's April.
Do you think they're not trying? Do you think Mike Trout is not trying hard?
That's a tactic that if you were going to do it, you would do it with a below 500 team in the second half of the season when you're just like, it doesn't matter. It's not consequential.
Or maybe
to
a team
playoffs.
Of young guys where you're just like, they're not, maybe you don't see enough fire or something, but like Trout, Rendon, and Ohtani, like what?
I forget in 08 what the circumstances were, but it was peak Josh Hamilton. I think they were worried he may have done something earlier in the game. It wasn't nearly as big of a deal because stats and analytics and Twitter wasn't really as big of a deal. But I do remember this vividly happening.
And what was the result?
I can't remember. I'm going to look it up. But I think there was more of a specific reason. He was like a Rays killer, maybe.
Very, very scientific. The Angels came back and won the game. It didn't hurt them in terms of outcome. It just seemed like a terrible means to an end. I get it. You want to fire up the team in some way. That isn't it. That's the wrong way to do it.
Yeah. I mean, even the best hitters are going to make out 60% of the time. And you just gave him that base.
Yeah. You know, is there a fast start team you're buying into so far? Or are you rejecting my question, same as Britt?
Well, I just wanted to poke holes in at least two of the teams you mentioned. It's easier to do that.
I only named three, so go ahead. You can get the coverall if you want.
Well, no, I think I might actually have something I like about the third team. The first team, the A's, I'm sorry, the lineup is super bad.
Horrible.
It's super bad. I'm gonna admit this. I left the game in the seventh, right before they scored two runs. I have no regrets because they scored the two runs with like a little blibby blue single and a little seeing eye thing up the middle. But the reason I left was the middle of the order was up, and the middle of the order was Christian Betancourt, Seth Brown, who was it? Sean Murphy had already been up.
Billy McKinney?
I have total respect. Yes, Billy McKinney.
The look of disgust on your face right now, if you're watching us on YouTube, you seem disgusted.
Dude, that is not a middle of a lineup. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Billy McKinney's been on 8 million teams. Christian Betancourt was like in a different country last, I think he was in Japan or something last year, and it's not like he came back because he was the MVP over there. He just came back.
No, he didn't go to a different league, have an Eric Thames sort of renaissance, and then come back with a lot of excitement. He just came back.
Just came back, you know? True. And I guess, you know, Seth Brown ended up winning the game with like a seeing eye, you know, two-run single. But Seth Brown is projected to have like a 600 OPS. The Rockies, I looked at this, they're projected to have two two hitters that are above average, Chris Bryant and CJ Cron. And I mentioned projections because that's the best way, especially early in the season, to kind of take a little bit of the like knowledge that we have now and then wrap it up into what we the knowledge we had before and sort of have an idea of like what this player is like. I will say that I like that the Rockies found Connor Joe, but him and Charlie Blackmon and Ryan McMahon at this point are more sort of average to below average guys than they are. Like, this is not the Blake Street Bombers. They didn't bring back the Blake Street Bombers. They didn't like lean into the offensive thing. And with the pitching side, like, they're just re-signing guys that have been there forever. How are they going to be better versus re-signing the guys that have been there before? You know what I mean? Like, I don't hate the Freeland deal. I don't hate the Marquez deal, but how are they getting better just having the same guys? So I don't really buy that one. The Cubs, I find them a little bit interesting, and I don't want to force a segue on you, but I will give you a preview of my hitter of the week. My hitter of the week is Seiya Suzuki.
Fair.
And there's a great piece on The Athletic. Mooney has a great piece on Seiya Suzuki, just about how he does not give away at bats. He has the best chase rate in the majors right now.
Nah, he's back on chase rate.
Yeah.
Back on chase rate.
But O-swing percentage.
He is O-swing. He does not give away at bats. He does not swing at any balls. And then, you know, this week he hit three homers, so it looks like the power is porting over. And the reason that I think that matters is that they're like kind of looking for a new foundation in that lineup. And I think, you know, with Suzuki and Contreras, they do have that, and maybe, you know, Ian Happ as a third wheel there. They're still looking for a little more offense. They're still looking for, you know, a little more pitching. And I wish the pipeline was producing some young players, some more young players than it is. But I could see them being like a 500 team that sneaks into the playoffs with a hot month.
By the way, I did find the Rays instance. They were up by 4 in the 9th inning when they walked Hamilton, and they went on to win the game.
So they just really didn't want to give up the game-tying homer.
Correct.
Hmm.
Yep.
But they were willing to bring the game-winning run to the plate.
Right.
Yeah, but I think if you look at that Rangers team, Josh Hamilton may have been the scariest guy by far.
Hmm.
I mean, that's 2008 Josh Hamilton was kind of in a class of his own in terms of offensive production. And even if the other quality bats they had were good, there was a gap there. But I'm still not on board with the strategy, even in those circumstances. I don't like that. Don't walk in runs.
You know, so, and some soft factors, like why would, you know, he be a Rays killer? You know, there's the whole history of the Rays drafting him. And, you know, correct. maybe he actually had grief with them. You know what I mean? Like, maybe he actually was like, I don't like the way you treated me. And now every time I come to town, I'm going to whoop your butts. So, you know, it's possible that was part. Sorry, my power is going out.
good explanation.
So I'm less enraged about the 2008 instance than probably this one.
Fair.
For a few reasons. I think we also have a lot more information at our disposal. I think it's a little bit of a different game. But yes, it is interesting. But Joe Maddon is one of the probably longest tenured managers right now, right? He's one of still of that old guard.
Yeah, he's got tenure.
I think that he also doesn't deserve, you know, there's some like sort of aura to him as like a new wave, you know, progressive, data-friendly manager. I don't think he deserves that aura anymore.
Well, yeah, I think it was different when he was the young, cool kid among managers, but that was before Kevin Cash and Craig Counsell and, you know, that wave of managers, Alex Cora, right? Those guys weren't managers yet when Joe Maddon was new. So you have to sort of turn back the clock to appreciate the cool factor of Joe Maddon relative to his peers. He was groundbreaking back then, and now you look at him and you're like, whoa, this is like that computer that's 12 years old. Yes. That was a great computer when I bought it. Yeah. Not sure it's very good now.
Yes. We did that story. They were the first team that really looked at data and had a QA coach and everything. So they were
Yeah, we even talked to Madden for that story, didn't we?
Yeah, they haven't He hasn't evolved quite as much as the rest of the sport, but he was considered. They were definitely what the Rays were doing was cutting edge.
Now the thing that separates him the most is like his little his sort of spring training antics, where he like you know gets a DJ and like you know has like a clown come into you know into spring training or whatever. He just always has like some weird thing he does, but. I think some people roll their eyes at that stuff, too.
I'm in for the DJ, out for the clown. So I like where his head's at on that. I think trying to keep people happy and engaged in the workplace, that's good. That's a step in the right direction. Walking in runs, a step in the wrong direction. So even, we're neutral right now at Madden. But I'm watching very closely at this point. Eno wanted to give his Hitter of the Week award to Seiya Suzuki. Britt, do you have a candidate for Hitter of the Week for the second week?
It was Suzuki. I think he won the Player of the Week too.
Did he win?
I think he also won NL Player of the Week. It was this one was a pretty.
We're on a slightly different schedule though, you know, because we're Wednesday to Wednesday on.
It's such
voting.
a weird a weekly award to give away midweek. I think Manny Machado and Francisco Lindor also receive votes for this week. I mean, Machado right now without Tatis has to shoulder a little bit of a heavier load. We got a lot of Padres slumping to begin the season. I don't expect Trent Grisham and Luke Voigt and those guys to continue struggling the way they have. Oh, and by the way, I got to get your thoughts. Who wins the Luke Voigt Tommy Pham fight that may or may not happen at some gym in San Diego? Do you guys have clear sides on that one that you like?
Luke Voigt definitely wins that one. He can deadlift like 600 pounds.
Voight's big, but Tommy Pham's out here talking about Muay Thai, and I think the technique for Tommy Pham might be better.
What if he grapples Luke Voight?
He is scrappy. That's
and Pham's
true.
Not small.
And it's a good fight. I'm glad you brought up Manny Machado, though. I don't think people realize how good he's been. Very quietly, been really, really excellent to kind of keep that team afloat. While I think he had like 5 hits one night. Like he's really been kind of the.
It's been
the
pitching in him, really.
Yeah, like he's really been the only reason that that team has kind of stayed afloat. And I think people are always kind of like down on him for whatever reason. But I think we rated him pretty high on our player tiers, right? You know, people think that he might have a really big year. A couple people that we talked to at least thought that he could be poised to have a pretty good year. That talent is still there. The talent is just a question of like, can he sustain it over a season? Can he play to that level? He seems almost energized, I feel like, having the team be his team for a while. I don't know if that's necessarily fair to say, but it sort of seems like that as an outsider.
And he, I mean, as a nerd, he underperformed some of his batted ball stats for the last couple of years. So, you know, there's like that feeling that like, okay, some year he's going to overperform his bat. You know, the pendulum has got to swing here. Because he makes contact, you know, with the best of them. And, you know, 28 homers last year was not super impressive. So I think he could, you know, have the mid-30s homers this year. And, you know, if the Padres have a good story around him, I think he could get MVP votes, maybe even win it. I mean, he does have MVP-type talent. If he has a year where he hits 330 with 35 homers and sort of, you know, wills the Padres into the playoffs.
Yeah, I could definitely see that happening.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
When you get injured, you don't want to wait for answers and options. That's why it may be time to explore the Nano Experience, a revolutionary treatment option designed to help active people get back to the lifestyles they love. Nanotechnology allows surgeons to see inside even the smallest joints and treat orthopedic conditions with a tiny camera and other nano instrumentation, all through a barely there poke hole incision. Wherever you've experienced an injury, whether it be a foot and ankle, hand and wrist, shoulder and elbow, knee or hip, nanoarthroscopy can be used to diagnose and treat your condition in an extremely, minimally invasive way. Don't wait to learn about the revolutionary Nano Experience and how it could help you or someone you know after an injury. Visit arthrex.info/theathletic. This is not medical advice and is not meant to be a substitute for advice from your physician. Talk with your physician about your health condition, potential surgical risks, and whether Arthrex products are right for you. Postoperative management is patient-specific and dependent upon your physician's assessment. Individual results will vary. Pitcher of the week for this week. Kershaw? Scherzer? Scherzer? Kershaw? Is there anyone else in the consideration here?
Oh, yeah, there's other people.
Of course, there always are.
Max Fried. Although I guess he lost two games, so, but I mean, he's throwing like 96 now. Carlos Rodon, the WAR leaders, I guess, are Max Fried, Carlos Rodon, and Joe Musgrove. Joe Musgrove went 2-0 with a 1.89 ERA. So, you know, I think he at least deserves an honorable mention.
Yeah, he deserves a mention. Kershaw, it's hard because had he kept going, he probably.
Oh, no.
No, seven
we landed in the discourse.
on opening day, his opening day. I'm giving this to Kershaw. I think we have to give it to Kershaw. 20 Ks through two starts. All 12 right, innings total. I know the second start wasn't as good as the first.
I wanted to get some other names out there. I'm not going to argue against Kershaw.
All right. Fried pitched really well, though. It's nice to see that the bounce back from him after a disappointing first start. Anybody else on your radar for pitcher of the week, Britt?
No, I think that does it. Honestly, you know, Scherzer, obviously, if he had completed the no-hitter last night, would have been maybe a case to be in front of Kershaw. The Mets rotation as a whole, if we're just going like team rotation, like I don't think anybody has been as impressive, especially without DeGrom, as the Mets. But I'm good with Clayton Kershaw getting it. I just, I don't know. That whole thing is going to bother me. I get why it was done. But man, we could have seen history and we'll just never know. The not knowing is what gets me.
I'm firmly on the side, though, that would rather see a healthy Clayton Kershaw in August and September and October than run the risk of he threw 110 pitches in his first start and messed up his arm again. Like I'd rather, they were up big at the time too, so it wasn't a close game. No reason to push it given the conditions. So I understand frustration, but I think they made the right call in that instance. All right, so Clayton Kershaw, our week 2 winner for pitcher of the week. He'll be getting a 1988 pack of Topps cards, which probably costs about 8 cents. Really cheap award. Suzuki's getting some 94 Topps, which look terrible and do have a four-player Jeter card that hopefully he will find inside that package. No guarantee those cards actually make it to the players, but we will try. We will try. One more thing to get to before we go. We have Brit's bold predictions after Britt and I really harshly judged Eno on this show a few weeks ago for his bold predictions. I shared mine on an episode of Rates and Barrels, I think just prior to opening day, and mine were completely outlandish. My Kevin Smith one just looks atrocious already. So, Britt, you can't do worse than I did in terms of saying just completely impossible things that even 2 weeks into the season look like there's no chance they're going to happen.
Okay.
I think I might win in terms of most hot sauce, but I also will lose in terms of fewest predictions that came true.
Yeah.
So let's have your bold predictions. What's your first bold prediction for this 2022 season?
So I'm going to try to not let the first 2 weeks. I had these predictions already, and I'm going to try to like not go back on them now, even though I missed last week. And some of them already look foolish. I was going to say that Buxton stays healthy and wins the AL MVP, and the guy can't stay healthy.
Well, the good news is, fortunately, it doesn't seem like that injury is as serious as it appeared when he walked off the field right away. That looked,
like,
the immediate thought was, something popped and it's an ACL and the season's over. And fortunately, he could be back maybe by the weekend. So I think that still holds as a prediction you can use. I'm right in the middle. I actually thought this was possible looking at odds maybe a month or so ago. He had pretty long odds at the time, maybe like plus 4,000, plus 5,000. And I thought this is plausible. This is the type of long shot bet you can reasonably make. I'm going to give you 3 out of 5 bottles of hot sauce for that bold prediction. I like it. I think it's bold, but it's not going to like, you know, burn your face off bold.
I agree. You know? I agree.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So agreement on the first one. Good bold prediction. Good start.
Okay. Thank you. Also, trying to not change based off this first week that makes me look stupid. The Detroit Tigers make the playoffs.
Ooh.
I'm going to crank that one up to, four or five bottles of sauce on that one. I know you like the Tigers, Britt, but
I do.
It was a four before the first pitch was thrown. I think with Casey Mize dealing with an arm injury, Matt Manning having a little bit of shoulder stuff, I think it's 5 out of 5 if you're sticking with that right now, because the problem with the Tigers, even though they have a lot of young talent, I don't think they have good enough pitching depth to withstand long-term injuries to guys in that rotation. I think that would be that would be the thing that craters them and keeps them under 500 if they don't have a healthy Mize and Manning for most of the season.
Yeah, that's spicy. They're projected to be the eighth worst team in baseball.
Okay. I got another spicy one then. The Yankees missed the playoffs.
I like how Brits are all more realistic than mine, and they're still spicy, which means they're better bold predictions across the board. They satisfy both things that make a bold prediction a good bold prediction.
Even given their start and their issues with scoring runs, actually, the Yankees are currently projected to be the fourth best team in baseball.
Yeah, yeah, that to me off the cuff feels at least like a 4 out of 5 on the bold scale.
I'm going five. Full ghost pepper on that one. But
wow, 13 bottles of hot sauce on those three projections.
Buck Showalter wins manager of the year.
Spicy.
Not as spicy as the Yankees one. No.
No.
Because let me see here.
He is in a perfect situation. That to me is an award designed for narrative.
Right.
And he goes into a clown show franchise and just makes them
and they're projected
less clown-like.
To be the second best team in baseball. So
they're supposed to win.
Probably going to make the playoffs. If they make the playoffs, then it's all, you know, Buck did it.
If it looks like Buck keeps them from being clowns this year, he wins because it was the perfect situation to walk into to win manager of the year. So I think it's two. I don't think it's a layup. I think it's a 2 out of 5 for me.
Yeah, not that spicy. All right. Vlad Guerrero Jr. winning the MVP, probably not that spicy. But still, I think it would be very tough.
Yeah. I'm going to go with 2 bottles on that one, too. Because Ohtani, you know, there's a little bit of, I think there's always fatigue, you know, with the guy who won last year. So Ohtani has to be better than he was last year, I think, to win the MVP again.
All right. I'm at 1 bottle of hot sauce on Vlad Jr. Vladito is always up near the top of the odds. One of the favorites.
He was like second last year.
You got any more? Okay. Do you want to try to get back to where you were? Because you were crushing it.
I was crushing.
I only shared 3. So if you only had your first 3, you beat me. The 4th and 5th ones have lowered your average now. So I think this one makes or breaks where you finish in the bold prediction ridiculousness standings.
Hot sauce standings.
Okay. I got one more. Dylan Bundy leads the Angels staff and wins with and has double digit wins.
These are the Twins staff and wins?
Yeah, sorry. The Twins.
Yeah.
He has looked early on like maybe he could be a guy.
Yeah. And it's all fastball. He was never a fastball guy in Anaheim.
I think it's an easy 4 for me with arguably room for 5. I feel like I'm going down on the sauce on this one because I don't like wins as a category.
But he also hasn't won double-digit a game since 2017, so it would be a big turnaround.
Mm. Yes. So he leads the team in wins, and it's a double-digit total.
Wins. Yes,
yeah, that's spicy enough. That's at least a 4.
Spicy.
I think the other reason it would be a 4 for me is that I don't like their other starters that much. I think that's the thing that's working against that being a 5 out of 5.
Yeah.
But a 4, that's really good, and it's a great high note. Those were great bold predictions. Britt did a much better job with bold predictions than I did this year. I'm already just embarrassed at my own output in that particular endeavor. But we have to go. Before we go, I should say you can get a subscription to The Athletic for $1 a month for the first 6 months at theathletic.com/baseballshow. You can find Britt on Twitter at Britt_Giroli. You can find Eno at EnoSaris. Find me at Derek Van Riper. The Athletic Baseball Show returns on Friday.
You've always got the green light at the 3-0 show.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a 1-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.